This is London Calling.
You are listening to Thought and Leaders.
Hello, 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 and welcome again to another global podcast that is Thought and Leaders. As you know, I scour this amazing planet of ours for the most insightful, the most intriguing guests out there. This week is absolutely no exception to that rule. We have the highly respected journalist Madeleine Davies. Hello.
Hi, Jonathan.
Hello. Lovely of you to be with us today. Do you want to just give the listeners a little bit of a background on yourself?
Yeah, sure. So I work for the Bureau of Investigative Journalism, which sounds like a bit like a department of the FBI, but we're actually a non-profit media organization in the UK. So instead of receiving our funding from advertising, we receive philanthropic grant funding, and that allows us to do public interest journalism. So we basically go away and do investigations, and then we partner with the traditional newspapers and broadcasters in order to publish.
Your work, including short films and documentaries, have appeared in The Guardian, The Time, The Telegraph, The Mail, CNN, Al Jazeera, Sky News. Oh, it just goes on and on and on, doesn't it?
It's a nice job in that we get to work with so many different media organizations.
One of these stories that was covered by the main media has been to do with something that you broke some time ago, and now it's been updated, to do with the vaccines. Do you want to take us back to the initial investigation?
Yes. So we started looking at equitable access to COVID vaccines, and we looked at that because back in the swine flu pandemic, poorer countries got vaccines 18 months or so after rich countries. And so the World Health Organization and Gavi, the Vaccine Alliance, set up COVAX, this organization, to try and shorten that lag. But when we looked at the figures, it seemed that most vaccines, something like 60% of the world's vaccines, had already been bought by rich countries, home to only about 1.2 billion people. Canada has bought enough doses to inoculate every Canadian five times. And places like the US, UK, EU, Australia, New Zealand, they've bought enough vaccines to vaccinate their citizens at least twice. This stark inequality that richer countries had bought all the world's supply of vaccines. The UK and the US have big pandemics, lots of people with COVID, but some of the other countries just didn't. We're not allocating the doses by the countries with the greater number of people with COVID. We're allocating it just by the countries that can pay the most or the countries that have the most political clout.
Yeah. I mean, the latest figures that I have in front of me here are saying that Australia, Canada, Japan, the UK and US, and of course the EU, have already secured more than 3 billion doses. That's 1.2 billion more than they need to give to their entire populations.
For most of the vaccines, other than Johnson & Johnson's and another one, you do need two doses. However, this is a global virus, and the longer that the virus is circulating, especially in half of the world, the more that we're going to see more of these variants, and these variants can be re-imported back into countries and affect populations. And so it makes more sense to vaccinate all the health workers and vulnerable groups in every country rather than vaccinate, you know, the whole of a population of one country, leaving another country's health workers unvaccinated. Health workers in various African countries aren't being vaccinated. Private citizens are kind of crowdfunding in order to try and buy vaccines privately for health workers. That's quite a sad situation that people are having to raise private funds in order to vaccinate their doctors, nurses, and healthcare workers. There have been studies showing that if we gave out the first 2 billion doses equitably, deaths would fall by 61%. If those doses are monopolized by the world's richest countries, only 33% fewer people will die. It would also be better for the world economy. Our economies, in many ways, rely on the economies of low and middle income countries. So with those economies hampered, that also has an effect on our economy. So it seems counterintuitive, but vaccinating people in other countries is also better for our economy.
Yeah, because I understand around 130 countries in the world haven't done any vaccinations at all, as at the time of recording this. That means that their healthcare workers remain particularly at high risk.
Some of the campaign groups like MSF have been having meetings with the UK government, the EU government, and asking them to comply with the World Health Organization's demand of donating doses on a rolling base. So the World Health Organization has asked the vaccine manufacturers, AstraZeneca, Pfizer, Johnson & Johnson, etc., to donate a proportion of the supply that they're giving out every month to COVAX so that it can be distributed equitably. The manufacturers haven't done that. They've formed deals with COVAX and given some doses, some of them not very many in the context of their global supply. But the other thing that the campaign groups are asking for is for countries to actually donate on a rolling basis. So far, that doesn't seem to be politically palatable.
Wow.
People in the UK, they want their grandma, their parents vaccinated. So the idea that the government would give away doses to someone else in another country, that would be difficult to swallow.
Prime Minister Johnson has said that he's going to be using his position as chairman of the G7 group of major economies to push the case for setting a 100-day target for developing vaccines when new diseases strike. That's kind of a step forward, isn't it?
Yeah, that's great. We also saw Macron advocating that 5% of the EU's supply should be donated. Hopefully this will be the case. There'll still be this kind of few months gap. As you said, the UN Secretary General said just 10 nations have administered 75% of the doses and 130 countries have received no doses.
But Boris Johnson has pledged to donate most of the UK's surplus vaccine supply to poorer countries. In a way, it's become a vaccine apartheid, hasn't it?
Yeah, that's what lots of campaign groups are calling it, just because of that stark difference. So I think the dream of COVAX, which is this organization set up by Gavi, the Vaccine Alliance, and the World Health Organizations to distribute doses equitably, the dream for that, I think, was that all of the vaccines manufactured in the world would all be given to COVAX, and then they would be distributed on the basis of the countries that had the greatest pandemic, rather than just the countries that could pay the most or that had the most political clout. And so maybe it'd be worth, after this pandemic, thinking about ways in which we could have done it differently.
I mean, so much about COVID has been, we could have done this differently, we could have done that differently. Countries have been learning as they've been going along. The pharmaceutical companies, they're doing pretty well out of this.
It's been reported that Pfizer will make $15 billion worth of sales.
Wow.
The price of the vaccines in the EU was leaked by a Belgian minister. Accidentally, they tweeted it. And we've since found out that that wasn't quite, you know, that $2.50 that the Belgian minister accidentally tweeted is not actually the full price. It's the full price that the EU paid is probably around $3.50 a dose for the AstraZeneca vaccines. And yet what we found when we looked at Uganda was that they're paying about $7, so twice as much.
Sorry, did you just say $7?
Yes.
And the EU is only paying some $3?
The EU is paying half of that, about $3.50.
Crazy.
So Uganda is paying twice as much for the same vaccine. Similarly, India and Brazil are paying about $5, so still a bit more for it's the same vaccine. It's produced by a different company in India, but the exact same vaccine. So again, we've got this inequity in price that poorer countries are paying more for the same vaccines, not getting access because the world supply has been snapped up by the rich countries.
Doesn't make sense to me. Sorry.
I guess you put it down to the fact that the EU, the US did put a lot of money into research and development for these vaccines.
Ah.
Lots of them pre-ordered millions, if not billions of doses before the vaccines had even gone through stage three trials or had been approved. So that gave the vaccine manufacturers a guaranteed market.
Uh-huh.
And because of that, you know, these countries have more political clout.
Yeah.
Israel just decided to pay about double for the vaccine, and it's sending quite a lot of data back to Pfizer. So data on adverse effects.
Right.
Not any kind of medically confidential data, but it's almost running a kind of trial of vaccination. That data will be very useful to Pfizer.
The US, EU and UK invested billions in AstraZeneca's vaccine, developed by Oxford University. Germany invested reportedly some 445 million in the vaccine developed by Pfizer and its German partner BioNTech. Moderna's vaccine was entirely funded and co-produced by the US government. And this was even when Trump was in power. Money talks.
Yeah, indeed, which is not surprising. You know, they have poured a lot of money into these vaccines. And so you can expect that they have some clout with the manufacturers. Additionally, especially in Europe, lots of the AstraZeneca factories are in Europe, so they have some clout that way.
Mm.
But I guess, as I've said, for all the reasons economically and then just the public health reason, if coronavirus is circulating in some parts of the world, then variants will occur, and those variants, you know, could render vaccines less effective. So it's in everyone's interest not just to vaccinate their national population, but to vaccinate the whole world.
Mm. I was thinking about what are the steps to take if you're a country and you want to make sure you want to get the vaccine. We've spoken about one of the steps that you could take, which is fund the research. I suppose the next one would be get in there early in terms of pre-order early. Bit of a risk because no one knew whether they would work or not. The other way is one that you mentioned, Israel. They struck a deal to get 10 million doses and a promise of a constant supply from Pfizer in exchange, as you were saying, for the data on the vaccine recipients. And the data, which has been coming out very recently, seems that it's around 85% effective. So it's working. But in one report that I've seen, they paid, it's amazing amount that they paid. They paid $30 a dose.
That's the trade-off that some countries have gone for. So Canada buying five times as many doses as its population needs. It was a gamble because at that stage, nobody knew which vaccines would be effective or whether they'd all be approved. So actually, you know, this is an incredible story of technology and biotech companies, and that we now have three, four, five effective vaccines.
Yeah.
But now that we're in that position, I guess everyone's saying, well, you know, we know these vaccines are now going to be approved. So you've got these doses. So why not give away the surplus? And to Canada's credit, it has promised that it will give away surplus. It just can't commit at the moment to a timetable as to when it can start donating. In the case of Israel, a country that doesn't have the population of some of the other regions, just decided it wanted to vaccinate its population the quickest. And so it agreed this deal to pay double the amount for the vaccine and send all this data back to Pfizer.
Mm.
And, you know, they are racing ahead. I think the figures show nearly half of the population has now had its first dose.
Fantastic. The only other way, I suppose, that you could do this, fourth and final way that occurs to me, is if the country makes the vaccines themselves. So that's where we were as this story was developing. It has developed since then in terms of farmers doing strange deals with various countries. Do you want to take us into that?
Yeah, so we started to speak to government officials, mainly in Latin America, about their vaccine negotiations. And the one thing that most of them said is that one company was particularly bullish in negotiations, and that was Pfizer. In the case of Argentina and Brazil, they started negotiating with Pfizer but Pfizer said, in order to access our vaccines, you have to indemnify us. If somebody sued Pfizer because they'd suffered an adverse effect from the vaccines, one in 50,000 people. So they do occur, but it's really a small number of people that we're talking about. Most of the vaccines are very safe.
Of course.
But yeah, some people will suffer an adverse effect and they might want to launch a legal case against Pfizer. But because vaccines protect everyone in society, it's agreed that the governments will bear the cost of that. So most governments agree to indemnify the company. So if somebody launches a legal case against Pfizer, it's actually the government of the country that will pay those costs rather than Pfizer, born out of that philosophy that the vaccines protect everyone. That's something that happened in the swine flu pandemic. The problem is, richer countries kind of have these processes in place already, so they have legal structures in order to indemnify. Lots of other countries just don't have those structures in place, so they had to race to kind of pass new legislation in order to indemnify, which was very complex. They needed expensive lawyers and took a long time. All of the vaccine manufacturers asked for this indemnity, and even COVAX asked companies to put these structures in place so that they could indemnify. Pfizer's demands went beyond that kind of basic indemnity that everyone was asking for. So normally with indemnity, someone can launch a case against the vaccine manufacturer and the government will pay, unless the adverse effect occurred because there was a problem with the company's factories, there was a problem with manufacturing, or there was a problem with delivering the vaccine at the company's ends. For example, their freezers broke down or they sent the wrong vaccine. So in those cases, which are considered to be linked to the company's negligence or fraud or malice, but you know, it would probably be negligence, then the government expects the company to pay in that case, because somebody getting an adverse effect that didn't show up in a clinical trial because it's extremely rare, but from a vaccine that worked, is very, very different to somebody getting an adverse effect from a vaccine that was poorly manufactured or, you know, hadn't been kept at the right temperature. That's an issue with a defective product. So if it's a defective product, the governments would expect Pfizer or the other manufacturers to pay. But there were these arguments in the negotiations, because these countries had to pass this new law to indemnify. They wanted that point made clearly in the laws that if it was a problem with Pfizer's negligence, then Pfizer would pay. Pfizer didn't accept that. In the case of Argentina and Brazil, they then went even further and said, look, if you want these vaccines, you have to agree to that indemnity. You also have to agree to put sovereign assets. So that usually means things like the country's federal bank reserves, military bases, embassy buildings, up as a sort of legal guarantee. In Brazil, it also asked for money in a foreign bank account. So if there were any legal cases against Pfizer, Pfizer could seize embassy buildings abroad or this money in the bank account in order to pay for it. And the countries said, you know, of course we can't agree to that. We can't agree to put our sovereign assets up in this deal. And they felt that Pfizer's attitude was just kind of, look, take it or leave it. That's the deal. So in Argentina and Brazil's case, that meant that they couldn't strike a deal. So those populations just won't have access to the Pfizer vaccine unless the countries renegotiate. In Argentina, the vaccine that's being given out at the moment is the Sputnik vaccine. And phase three trial data for the Sputnik vaccine does look good, but it hasn't yet been approved by any stringent regulator. So there are questions over its efficacy, although the data does look very good.
If Argentina or any country were to hand over these assets and money in good faith, and then there wasn't any significant legal stuff that goes through the courts, then in the meantime, they're making money on holding other countries' monies, aren't they?
This money would just be put up as a kind of collateral. So it would only be seized if there was a legal case.
That's fair enough.
It's just the case that Pfizer wanted it written into the contract that if there were any adverse effects and a legal case was launched against them, for any time in the future, they'd be able to seize Argentinian or Brazilian assets and use the cost of that to pay for these cases, which is something that governments just can't agree to.
It opens the doors to the Russians and others offering a vaccine without these pre-requirements from a government.
Yeah, indeed. And it's worth pointing out that the other Western manufacturers also, they didn't ask for such a strong indemnity. So they were indemnified, but they... Well, we don't know for sure because the agreements are confidential. But what the government officials told me was that the other companies agreed to the kind of basic indemnity, if you like. Pfizer's went beyond that, and they felt that they would, you know, just have to be paying Pfizer's legal costs for potentially in perpetuity, which they couldn't agree to. Another Latin American country, which we can't name because it has signed a confidentiality agreement with Pfizer, these arguments led to a three-month delay. And because we know that these doses are allocated on a first-come, first-served basis, then any delay in signing that deal is a delay in that country getting vaccines. So the government official was just really angry that these kind of arguments push them back in the queue and potentially led to more of their population getting coronavirus and dying. They actually described it as a kind of bullying, that the offer was just take it or leave it, and that they were held to ransom, they said.
We mentioned in some of the third world countries the issues and the situation that they are experiencing over there. I understand that some of these countries, they're projecting that they won't be able to vaccinate their population for 1 year, 2 years. Is that right?
The Economist Intelligence Unit predicts that there won't be widespread inoculation across the African continent until 2023, 2024, depending on the country.
Right.
Gavi, the Vaccine Alliance, kind of disputes those predictions. And we are seeing the first vaccines from COVAX being delivered this quarter, so by March. I guess it's still probably too early when we can say everyone in a country will be vaccinated, but it is looking at a year or 2 years down the line for some areas.
It usually takes at least 10 years to develop vaccine. These vaccines are being given out globally. In theory, very, very unlikely. In 2 years down the line, maybe there would be an adverse effect. In that case, these governments would have to foot the bill.
So Pfizer has struck deals with lots of countries across Latin America, Peru, Ecuador, Chile, Colombia, nine or so countries. I think it was only Argentina and Brazil that turned down the deal. And the issue with these negotiations is that all the contracts are completely confidential. So if you look at any government documents on it, it just says we can't talk about this, this is confidential. And so we just don't know what's in the contract. So it could be the case that some countries did have to agree to putting their sovereign assets up. We just don't know.
Maybe more than you are currently aware of then.
We've tried to contact government officials in different countries. Most of them told us they couldn't talk about this. Argentina and Brazil, we kind of only really know about this clause because Argentina and Brazil turned it down. And so we're happy to talk about it publicly.
It's a fascinating story of money, of covering nations in terms of vaccines.
The Medicines Healthcare Regulatory Authority in the UK has released its first batch of data on adverse effects. There were hardly any serious effects. And we do know that the vaccines have now been given to millions of people worldwide. Fingers crossed, it's all looking good.
It's wonderful that they're out there and that they are being produced. But we're talking about millions and millions and millions and millions and millions of files of vaccine. They can cope with all of this stuff?
Yeah.
And then there's distribution as well, by the way.
A logistical nightmare. The limiting factor for vaccinating more people is just how many vaccines we can produce in 2021. So it's thought that about, I think, 7 billion or so doses can be made, which is not quite enough to vaccinate everyone in the world because you need two doses. The point is most of those doses have been snapped up by rich countries. So what some of the campaign groups are saying is that, you know, at the moment we can make 7 billion doses, we've got a pie that size. Why not get more factories on board in order to make more doses so that we can vaccinate more people.
Yeah.
Problem is the intellectual property. So the pharmaceutical companies hold the license and the recipe to make these vaccines. They've shared it with some factories. AstraZeneca particularly has about 9 factories in India, Brazil, Argentina, Mexico, Europe, all over the world making these vaccines. The other companies also have factories, but have made less of a push to kind of get it manufactured in places all over the world. The campaign groups say if the recipe and the intellectual property for these vaccines were shared and more factories could make it, we could make more doses.
Of course.
Yeah, there's this big campaign, the People's Vaccine Campaign, in order to break that intellectual property and get people to share it. What the industry says is that there are no more factories that can make this. Before coronavirus, the world was producing routine flu vaccines, et cetera, and that global capacity has been ramped up hugely, and there just aren't any spare factories lying around that can make it. So even if we break intellectual property, it doesn't mean that, you know, there'll be factories tomorrow that can come on board. To make these vaccines, you need trained technicians. That takes 3 to 6 months. You need to get your factory up to the quality standards necessary. You need to register them with regulators, et cetera, et cetera. Mm. I mean, I'm interested in kind of getting to the bottom of that, whether there are factories, perhaps with some financial support to get them up to that standard, would be able to be making more vaccines. Mm. A company in, I think in Denmark, has come forward and said, look, we've got a factory that could make enough vaccines for Scandinavia, but nobody's asked us.
Mm. The other thing that occurs to me, Madeline, is if they are at full stretch with their factories in producing these vaccines, what about other drugs that people still need? Cancer drugs, coronary drugs. Are they going to be able to cope with pushing out those drugs as well as this?
Lots of people are worried about that. Vaccines have to be made in quite specific factories. So it's probably not the same factories that are making drugs as that are making these vaccines. But yeah, I mean, companies only have a certain capacity. And if that capacity is taking up with coronavirus, then other things will have to be dropped. But that's a really good question.
Your investigations are continuing. How can people follow you, get hold of you, and so forth?
So I'm on Twitter. So it's at Madeline Davis. My name is a strange Welsh spelling. So it's Madeline Davis. Or you can find me on the Bureau of Investigative Journalism's website, and you can just email me directly.
It will be fascinating to see where your story goes next. So once again, Madeline, thank you so much for joining us here on Thought and Leaders.
Thank you so much for having me, Jonathan.
Where can they read this latest article of yours?
Stat News, which is a big American health site. It's also going out with Ojo Publico in Peru, La Nacion in Argentina, and a few other places. But the English language place to read it would be Stat News.
Okay then. Well, everyone, until next time, stay safe and I'll see you soon.
Great to speak to you. I've got the brain, you've got the looks,
let's make lots of money. Thought and Leaders is a Goodbye production. If you're looking for award-winning content for your brand or want to chat about the show, you can either email reinvent@me.com, that's reinvent@me.com, or why not visit us at www.thoughtandleaders.com. That's thoughtandleaders.com. Look.